Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. You know, I've been doing news now for some 30 years, two languages all over the world and here in the U.S., and interviewed four presidents, worked at four of the U.S.'s major television networks, been fired by most. I believe news should be honest and direct and impactful, and this is Direct Impact. Here's a question for you. Why was one of the most important leaders in all of U.S. politics spending so much time in Taiwan recently? Look, there she is. That's Nancy Pelosi, back in August, as she becomes one of the most senior U.S. officials to go to Taiwan in 25 years.
It's really clear that while China has stood in the way of Taiwan participating and going to certain meetings, that they understand that they will not stand in the way of people coming to Taiwan.
Now, despite or regardless of whatever she says about diplomacy and friendship with the Taiwanese people, the fact of the matter is this. Her trip was all about one thing and almost one thing only, semiconductor chips. Semiconductor chips. If that's not the case, why else then did she spend most of her time while she was there dining with the leaders of TSMC, the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, otherwise known as the world's biggest chip maker? More on TSMC and Pelosi in a moment. But first, I want to back up just a little bit to help you better understand how we got to where we are, how we got to the brink of what some are now calling an all-out global chip war. Chips, as you probably know, run everything. Your car, your phone, your refrigerator, you name it. I mean, I'm talking about just about everything that's made now and just about everything that's made in the future. And they're getting smaller and smaller and teensy bit smaller. So what is it though? What is a chip? It's a set of electronic circuits printed into a tiny little piece of silicon that 50 or 60 years ago, that whole thing would have taken up this entire studio. That's how big it would have been. Now it's like this big, right? Today, it's microscopic, and it's made of silicon. Why? Because silicon allows it to semiconduct electricity. That's why it's called a semiconductor. At first, the chips were made in the United States, but then, because the technology was so specialized and so expensive and, you know, we didn't want to pay workers here all that much money, the U.S. pushed the manufacturing base of chips to Japan, where then workers there would do it cheaper. And besides, they were already expert at making transistors at the time, the Japanese. Those little tiny switches that turn on and turn off circuits. Almost overnight, Japan became the number one designation for chip manufacturing in the entire world. But then, the U.S. said, not so fast, Japan. So here's what happened. As seen on the, look at these pictures. Look at this stuff. Look at these images. This is from the 1980s. U.S. politicians complained that all the jobs were going to Japan. So many of them actually walked out on the lawn of the U.S. Capitol and started smashing. Look at this. They started smashing Toshiba stereos, declaring them the enemy. The U.S. trade war with Japan was on. So Japan is out. So who's in? Who's going to make the chips? Good question. Suddenly, the U.S. teams up with Taiwan, and the two come up with what appears to be a deal. From now on, Taiwan will manufacture the chips to fuel the United States, our tech industry's needs, at a cheaper price. And in return, Taiwan is going to get U.S. warships doing military exercises along its coast and also along the coast of China to send a message to China. It is what the mafia would call a protection racket, right? I mean, this is like right out of a gangster movie. You give us what we need and we'll make sure nothing happens to you. That's the deal. Good deal for both sides, right? I mean, from that geopolitical arrangement, the world's largest chip maker, TSMC, was born. TSMC, the one that Nancy Pelosi met with. It solves the U.S.'s chip problem, and the U.S.'s military solves Taiwan's security problems with China. I mean, here's the deal. Henceforth, Taiwan becomes dependent on the U.S., and the U.S. gets all the chips it needs to control the global tech sector, so much so that by 2010, 92% of all the U.S. chips are made in Taiwan. 92%. But then, something else happens. Suddenly, China and its economy starts to boom while this is going on. You know, explosive growth. The Chinese start leading the way in the making of TVs and phones and monitors and computers and kitchen appliances and, automotive parts and you name it. And because all those things need chips, China starts buying up all the chips that it can get its hands on. They become the world's biggest consumers, biggest buyers of chips. But where are they going to get all the chips? Where are they getting all the chips? From here. They're buying them from the United States. But remember, we're getting them from Taiwan. So think about that. You know, that means China is building their tech economy by using chips being made in Taiwan. Their so-called arch enemy, right? Which didn't matter when China's economy and military needs were small, but not anymore. They're big. So one day, the U.S. realizes this. They realize the Chinese are outperforming us, our companies, Chinese, U.S. companies, and doing so with chips that we here in the U.S. are supplying to them. And suddenly, Washington has what we like to call a tizzy fit. Remember when we kicked the Japanese out of the chip industry? Well, here we go again. When the U.S. realizes that China is beating them in tech development, we freak out. But the real freakout comes when we realize that China has used this chip technology to develop a missile that is so advanced it can go around the world at supersonic speeds and can do so using a technology that makes it undetectable. So China, using our chips, is building and selling advanced weapons. Can you say, uh-oh? The U.S. has to come up with a way to punish China, and punish they do. In steps, none other than Joe Biden and the Biden administration. Not that he's the first to do this, but it's starting to become even more aggressive. The Biden administration goes all out with the anti-China restrictions that forbid any and all U.S. tech companies from doing business with China. No one is allowed to sell a single chip to China. Period. Everything is blocked. U.S. firms are forbidden from doing business with China. And to make things even more restrictive, no U.S. citizen is allowed to take a job working for a Chinese firm. In case you were thinking, I could make more money working for China, the U.S. says, no, you can't. So much then, right, for all that talk about a free market that we always brag about and how that makes us different from the rest of the world. Sorry, China, you are not allowed to take part in this free market thing that we always talk about. Huh? And speaking of anti-free market moves, what else does the Biden administration do? It gifts, literally gives, $50 billion of my money that they take from my taxes to U.S. tech companies, the ones that make the chips, giving them a leg up, a huge leg up on all of their competitors anywhere in the world and here in the United States. Essentially free money. Isn't that what we used to accuse China of doing when we say that their companies are communists who are state-sponsored, state-run, et cetera? Sounds a lot like it. And then to seal Mr. Biden's deal even more, there she is, Nancy Pelosi in Taiwan. The message to China is delivered, and the Chinese get it. Pelosi is there to tell Taiwan to keep making chips while also letting them know we got their backs. How? U.S. warships traveling up and down the Taiwan Straits. We see it like monthly. Sending an obvious signal telling China, back off. But China is no longer a country with just a tech-based economy. It really now has the world's biggest navy, arguably, capable of blockading everything that comes in and out of Taiwan if it wanted to, including, think about this, the export of chips, which would, in essence, freeze the U.S. economy. In fact, the world economy. Why? because everything that we buy here in America is made with chips. Remember what happened with the supply chain disruptions that were caused during COVID? You remember that, right? You remember how hard it was to buy a car or anything for that matter. Well, if China were to do that, if China were to blockade the coast of Taiwan from getting those chips out of there and going throughout the world and specifically to the United States, experts say it would be 100 times worse than the supply chain disruptions that we saw during COVID. And that would be a massive global chip war. KJ Noe is a journalist, a political analyst, a writer, and a teacher. He specializes in the geopolitics of the Asia-Pacific region. KJ, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
What about the idea that some are conjecturing that China could actually do a naval blockade with its massive navy and say to the United States, look, enough is enough. You live off of these Taiwanese chips. We're not going to let these Taiwanese chips get to you anymore. How big a deal would that be?
You know, it's possible. Nothing's out of the realm of possibility. But I think it would be such an extraordinarily belligerent act that I don't really can't imagine China doing anything like that. Simply, China's approach is to trade and to have good relations with the rest of the world. Certainly, chips are part of it. And China wants peaceful reunification with Taiwan Island, its province that split off through a series of, political pressures, largely due to the U.S. Encouraging and supporting its ability not to reintegrate. But I think China wants peaceful reunification, and I cannot imagine something like that happening.
Okay, well, one thing is what you want, KJ, and another thing is what you get. And it seems, at least to hear China tell it, that all it's gotten from the U.S. is a kick in the teeth, consistently, in many, many, many ways. And at some point, they're just going to have to say, look, guys, enough is enough.
This is true.
Go ahead.
As I said, China wants good relations. It's the U.S. which is escalating in what I refer to as hybrid war. And this hybrid war involves tech war, trade war, financial warfare, legal warfare, information warfare, political warfare, as well as massive encirclement with bases and this constant drumbeat of military exercises that are becoming more and more threatening. So certainly China is not getting any of the results that it wants from its engagement from the United States. At best, the U.S. is playing Jekyll and Hyde or good cop, bad cop with it. But still, I can't imagine that the U.S., that China would try to embargo U.S. Access to Taiwanese chips. There are many steps that could be taken long before that, such as holding back rare earth minerals or simply sanctioning U.S. corporations the same way that the U.S. has sanctioned Chinese corporations.
By the way, KJ, I was reading and I just shared with our listeners and viewers a little while ago that there are some experts who predict that if China did do that, I'm not saying they're going to, but if they did do that, it would be 100 times worse than the supply chain disruptions that we saw during COVID.
Of course. I mean, the supply chain disruptions during COVID were caused by, factories slowing down or shutting down, and that was something that eventually was managed. But the simple fact is that the United States is so deeply enmeshed with China's economy.
Yes.
Most of its industrial supply chain, most of its industrial manufacturing is done inside of China. And if you take, for example, your average car has about 30,000 different components. Your fighter jet has probably 350,000 components. And I assure you, a large number of those components are manufactured in China. And so that's why decoupling, or even this euphemism, de-risking, is actually an extraordinary, foolhardy thing. But the United States seems to be firmly set on this. And what it's trying to do is it's trying to decouple and it's trying to farm out certainly its military industrial production to Japan, to Australia, now to India, and of course to South Korea.
Thanks so much, KJ. Stay right there. We're going to come right back in just a minute. By the way, I should mention to you that we can continue this conversation. All we got to do is go over to Twitter. My handle there is Rick Sanchez TV, where we can talk about some of the same things that we're talking about during this particular show. I'll look for you there. Now, when we come back, the U.S. kicks out China, as we just explained. India is now stepping in and saying, okay, how about if we become your China alternative? We'll be right back.
I'll look forward to talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence, its own existence.
On July the 8th, 1941, German troops entered Estonia from the south. Soviet soldiers and civilians fought the enemy courageously on Estonian soil. There were thousands of casualties.
Солдаты 2-го ударного фронта и 8-й стрелковой дивизии на протяжении 6 километров начали форсировать реку. Именно здесь первые плоты были спущены.
During the years following the Soviet victory, a large number of monuments, obelisks and burial sites were erected to honor those who had fallen in the war.
Клога – это памятник зверств против человечества. Надо, чтобы это знали.
However, recently many of them have either been demolished, vandalized or completely neglected.
Кто-то пытался болгаркой спилить ордена с памятника, бронзовый солдат.
But there are those who do their best to preserve what's left of the memory so as to prevent rewrite history and remake consciousness.
Как правило, поднимается нашим объединением Верония каждый год от 50 до 100 солдат РКК.
American voters are rarely interested in foreign policy during election cycles. That said, the issue of Ukraine may be the exception this time round, particularly among GOP voters. Much of the Republican base has soured on the Ukraine policy. They see it as Biden's war.
By the way, there is something else going on when it comes to the geopolitics of chips. India has now begun to assert itself as the alternative to China when it comes to the manufacture of semiconductors. It is announcing a $10 billion incentive plan to boost semiconductor manufacturing in the country. By the way, they've tried this before in India and have not been able to pull it off. But with this cold war now between China and the U.S. when it comes to all things tech, some think maybe this time it could be different. And we're back now with geopolitical expert, author, analyst, KJ Noh. I could probably come up with all kinds of descriptions for him, but I think three is good. KJ, thanks so much for being with us once again.
Pleasure to be with you.
Let's talk about India real quick. So India just has come out recently and said, look, U.S., China, you guys can't get along, and apparently the U.S. doesn't want China involved in the whole chip manufacturer trade industry. And they're saying, we are now willing to step in and become the alternative to China. And we're going to put our money where our mouth is. Our Modi and his government are efforting $10 billion to bootstrap or kickstart, I guess I should say, the chip industry in India. What do you make of that?
I think it's going to be a heavy lift. You know, chips are extraordinarily complex to build. Skilled manufacturing is not easy. Remember, TSMC has tried to build fabs in Arizona. It's, you know, it's been encouraged with, you know, a $50 million, you know, bonus to create a fab in Arizona. And it's having a lot of trouble. So that's inside the United States with already the technology, the support, the infrastructure, and even the workers. So I think it's going to be even harder in India. Countries that have shifted to other countries outside of China, for example, to Vietnam, Southeast Asia, mm-hmm. have had difficulty transplanting the chip industries. And I think it's going to be a heavy lift, but I think it's very important to note that this is happening because, as I said, the United States wants to decouple from China. It wants to create a supply chain that is independent, an enclosed supply chain that is outside of China. And a lot of its kind of military industrial production will be done in India, Korea, Japan, and Australia.
Let me ask you the question this way, in regards to what I mentioned a while ago before the break, where I said, I was fascinated by this conversation between Xi and Blinken, where Xi essentially said to Blinken, look, I mean, you can keep doing what you're doing, but there will be consequences, and this thing could become conflictive at some point, given your recent track record, which I thought was interesting. And those aren't his exact words, but I think that was the gist of what he was telling them. Do you suspect that the U.S. will take that message and react accordingly, or will they not react at all to that warning from Mr. Xi, President Xi?
Well, the U.S. has already reacted. Essentially, how it's reacted is it's told China that that we don't care what you think. And immediately after, Biden called Xi a dictator. Blinken affirmed it. He said that, you know, this is what we all think and feel, and the U.S. has continued to escalate. Same thing with, you know, the defense minister. They said they wanted direct meetings, direct communications with him. At the same time, they were sending a ship through the Taiwan Strait in this very belligerent passage. So the U.S. is playing Jekyll and Hyde. It's playing good cop and bad cop. It, you know, makes nice, and then immediately the next day it turns around and it does something aggressive, violating, abusive from China's standpoint. It's like a cycle of domestic violence, except it's not a cycle, it's a spiral. And that spiral is spiraling downward towards kinetic war.
Notwithstanding the chip situation in and of itself, that friction, that aggressiveness that you just so well described to us, how long can this last before it becomes worse? Or possibly even, you know, some kind of conflagration between our two nations?
Well, I'm very worried about that, Rick. I think you put your finger right on it. And I think that this is the most dangerous thing we're facing, that we're right on the precipice of kinetic war. Blinken's meeting with Xi was a kind of, I think, a last good faith effort by the Chinese to see, can we reset things? Can we reset things to the Bali baseline? The Bali baseline was meeting with Xi and Biden in Bali last year. And there, Biden agreed that we are not engaging in a Cold War. We are not trying to suppress China's development. We are not building alliances against China. We are not we don't want war. That was essential. And we respect China's sovereignty over Taiwan Island. Those were the agreements. They came to this agreement, and the Chinese assumed in good faith that this was the baseline from which they could start from. But clearly, every single one of those understandings has been violated. We're continually escalating. Blinken has only paid lip service to this. Immediately, he left the meeting, turned around, and started to aggress and, you know, diss China again. And I think this means that we're very, very close to the precipice of war. It is not an optimistic situation.
Boy, let us hope you are wrong. By the way, final question, only because, as you may know, I was born in Cuba. There has recently been reporting that China is creating some infrastructure locales in Cuba itself, 90 miles away from the United States. What do you make of that? And can you confirm it, or do you believe it, or do you think it'll lead to anything?
Well, you know, I don't have intel on the ground, but I do know that there's several journalists and news agencies that have been on the ground. They've asked people left, right, and center all around the place, and they've all said there's no such thing. There is no such base. It doesn't exist. That's the people on the ground. And then the foreign ministry of Cuba has said, no, there is no base. The Chinese have said, no, there is no base. So I think this is just kind of projection. There is a country that does have a foreign base on Cuba. That is the United States. The base is called Guantanamo, where human rights violations are routine. If China did want to build a base, the first place it could and should build a base is in North Korea, where, once again, the U.S. is very close to kinetic war with China, and North Korea has a direct border with China, and it also has a mutual defense treaty. The only country in the world which has a mutual defense treaty with China is North Korea. So that would be the first place to build a base, not in Cuba.
Your insight is amazing, KJ, and you obviously are someone who understands the situation and thinks through it and reads, and I would encourage anyone to reach out to you or get your materials because you know this stuff. Thank you so much. KJ, no. Thanks for your time here on Direct Impact. Hey, before we go, I want to remind you of our mission. It's simple, really. I would love to de-silo the world. We've got to stop living in these little boxes where this side doesn't talk to this side and only knows what it knows, but not what they know. And look, truths don't live in boxes. Truth is everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez. I'll be looking for you again right here, where I hope to give you a direct impact.